The unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect truth is seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad kalpas. Now we can see and hear it. We can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. Well, good morning. I wanted to talk about a piece. It's a piece that Great Master Dogen wrote, and you find it in Zenny's Eternal Life in the Shishogi. Okay, it is a section of the Shishogi. Shishogi meaning training and enlightenment. But it's in a section of that, towards the end of that piece. And I'll read you the sentence I kind of want to focus on. So, you need no further teaching than the above in order to show gratitude. And you must show it truly in the only real way in your daily life. Our daily life should be spent constantly in selfless activity, with no waste of time whatsoever. Okay, so Great Master Dogen is referring to the no further teaching than the above, I think that what he's referring to, because he talks about the four wisdoms, charity, tenderness, benevolence, and sympathy. So those precede this sentence, and that's what he's talking about when he's talking about no further teaching than the above to show gratitude. Really, the part of this sentence that I want to focus on, you must show it truly in the only real way in your daily life. Our daily life should be spent constantly in selfless activity with no waste of time whatsoever. So I really like the only real way, because I think, as we all know, the only real way that we exhibit training is in our daily lives. That's what we've got. You know, that's where we practice. We don't practice so that we can float on a cloud, so that 10 years will be someplace. It's so that in our daily life, right in front of us, that we can train. And these four wisdoms that Great Master Dogen talks about, charity, tenderness, benevolence, and sympathy, are, you know, simple, but actually very deep means of that expression. Okay. So our daily lives should be spent constantly in selfless activity with no waste of time whatsoever. How can we possibly do this? I mean, we know ourselves. We know life. You know, we don't have to read a novel or a movie. We know how our own lives play out. That's a really tall order. Constantly selfless activity with no waste of time whatsoever. I mean, that's a really tall order. And as we all know, we fall short of that. Okay, I had a philosophy teacher in college who used to say, you have to waste time to know what time is. Actually, at that point in time, I thought that was quite deep. You know, that, yeah, he had something there. He's actually a very good teacher. When I took my final exam from him, you did some kind of presentation, and then you had to go see him in his office. Well, I was like the third person waiting to go in to see him, and the first person that came in came out crying. The second person that was in there, they were shouting at each other. And I thought, whoa. Anyway, I got through just fine. For some reason, he just didn't. Whatever my project was, it was okay. So Venerable Anchan Cha said that if you want to do something about suffering, you're going to suffer. It's kind of hard to not see the suffering that we're causing. You know, take an honest look and not feel that. So the fact of the matter is we all waste time in our lives. Obviously, we all suffer. And that realization is partly why we are here today, to hear the Buddha Dharma. Okay? So these things are kind of an impetus, a kick in the rear to get us to look at things. Okay, in Buddhist training, we try to lessen the grip of my time, my space, my right, my life. We don't try to squash these things, okay, because they're there. But we try to loosen the grip, the my part. You know, it's more lifetime space as opposed to my. We can really ease up on that. What do you call that? An adjective. As you all know, we see ourselves and other beings as being interdependent. Okay, so there's not this separation between us and other beings. Meditation, the precepts, the teachings of the Buddhas and ancestors show us the value of letting go of the separating, judgmental, compartmentalizing self, which we all have. Okay? But doing the practice shows us that we can actually let go of these. Because in these things, as we probably well know, there is a certain degree of suffering, a certain degree of wasting time, a certain degree of selfishness. So, and when we let go, we don't fall into a bottomless void. No, nothing, because we let go. Rather, we find a deeper place in the heart to respond from. Okay? We see that we can be bigger, more compassionate, and more generous than the small self that thinks it is separate. Because this is the problem, thinking that we are separate. And in fact, this place of refuge is the true reality. It's just that our perspective is out of focus. It's distorted for whatever reason. And there's all kinds of reasons, probably all kinds of good reasons on one level. But really, do they serve us well? So what is selfish activity? Is it always outer directed? What about taking care of me? Okay. So in the same part of the Shishogi, Great Master Dogen says, the life of this one day, today, is absolutely vital life. Your body is deeply significant. Both your life and your body deserve love and respect, for it is by their agency that truth is practiced and the Buddha's power exhibited. The seed of all Buddhist activity and of all Buddhahood is the true practice of perceptual truth. And I think it's important to see in that sentence that the Buddha's power is the true practice of perceptual truth. It's not some kind of strange power, okay? But it's about perceptual truth. So Great Master Dogen makes it very, very clear that our life and our body deserve love and respect. If we don't take care of our life and our body, it will be hard, if not impossible, to practice. Because who's going to take care of it but us? We've got this one life, this one body. We have to take care of them. You all know that Buddhism is the middle way between indulgence and asceticism. The Buddha himself found this in his journey. It was after he took food and cleaned and bathed his body that he could settle into the deep meditation that led to his seeing the Four Noble Truths. He tried all kinds of ascetic practices, but it's when he took it from the middle way, when he took care of his body, his mind. And of course we know that the Buddha always taught where there's suffering, there could also be a cessation of suffering. So the Buddha never just taught suffering. That's it. No. Okay. So selfless activity and no waste of time is not about ignoring oneself, physically, mentally, or spiritually. If we don't take care of ourselves, as I said before, who will? We live in this body, and it is in this body that we each practice the truth. It's our vehicle. On the other hand, though, taking care of ourselves, I don't think, is about cuddling and pampering ourselves. Okay? If we do this, we have let fear and greed into what should be a natural practice. No, it's just not going off that way. And because with the body and taking care of it, we always have to bear in mind very prominently that this body is impermanent. Okay? We can take the greatest care that is possible of it, and it's still impermanent, and yet we should take care of it. Okay? So someone gave me a lovely piece of pie yesterday. And I ate the pie for breakfast. It was my coffee before I started the work on this talk. I could just do it in my room, I need time to concentrate, and nothing like pie to concentrate. But preparing the Dharma talk can be hard work for me. So this treat was a nice way to go into the preparation. Is this selfish of me? Obviously, I don't think you think it is, and I don't think it is. It's just a piece of pie. If on the other hand, every time I prepare to talk, I required a piece of pie before I began. Well, for one thing, I would put on a lot of weight. And yes, this would be selfish. And, honestly, I probably wouldn't enjoy it. Food you really like and you want to have it more and more and more, and then it kind of gets like, oh, this isn't so special. I'll say another example. Some of us need more sleep than others. Is this selfish? Okay. Well, I don't think so. But if we require that we always must have 10 hours of sleep, come hell or high water, come conditions, that we cannot control, that we always have to have 10 hours sleep. I don't know why I picked 10 hours, but anyway. And if we don't, we won't be seen that day because we need to rest. Well, that's probably bordering on selfishness, if not going directly into it. Okay. Many of you know that I'm a baseball fan. I can't help it. I grew up in San Francisco. I love the Giants. Okay. Sometimes I catch a little of a game on the radio. I find it relaxing. Okay, is this selfish? Is it a waste of time? Maybe some of you would say it's a waste of time, but because you don't like baseball. That's okay. I can take it. In my participation in the life of the monastery, if my participation in the life of the monastery revolved around my right to listen to baseball games, and when there was a Giants game, you didn't see me. And I had a big screen TV in my room, which I don't have, so I could enjoy baseball because I worked so hard at other times. Well, this would be for me both selfish and a waste of time. Even though I like baseball, it would be selfish and a waste of time. Rinpoche Master Jiyu hammered into us that in Buddhism there is no guilt. Remorse and regret, yes, but no guilt. It's okay to have likes and dislikes, hobbies, things we like to do to relax, comfort foods, okay, occasionally, exercising, to have cats and dogs, a favorite jacket, to read books other than official Dharma texts, even to use the internet is okay. Okay? You know, there's many more examples. The difficulty, selfishness and waste of time comes into play when we have to have it. It's my right to have it. I must have it. And we all know this, you know. We just see ourselves kind of revving up into this. And if we're honest with ourselves, what does that do? You know, what does that do with our lives? What does it do with our time? Okay. Well, I think when we do this, there's attachment, there's clinging, there's holding on and pushing away. And those, you know, they lead us down a certain way that I don't think benefits us. So there's no one up there. Actually, there's no one up there. But there's no one up there keeping a record of our selfish moments and our waste of time. You know, this is this kind of book that, you know, we're going to have to face at the end of our lives. Okay. Sometimes, as I said a number of times, it's the realization of our selfishness and of our time wasting that turns us around. You know, just catch ourselves and we realize, oh, this isn't good. This isn't fruitful. This isn't beneficial. So no one up there keeping a record, and we do these things, and we can catch ourselves. The thing is, we just have so much time in life. I don't mean this morbidly, but we do. I mean, we're impermanent. No one comes here and remains forever. And in fact, we don't know how much time we have. So time is precious, and to make good use of it is wise. Reverend Master Jiu used to say that at first we train for self. In other words, we need to train ourselves. You know, rather than having our focus all over the place, it's good to initially focus here. What is it that I am doing? What is it I'm doing with my life? Really, it's about ceasing from evil, okay? Which is said to be the source of all the laws of Buddha, and to stop doing the things that are harmful for self and other. So then she also said, in time, our training expands to training for others. Because we've focused on ourselves for a little bit, because we've taken a look, we realize and have a better understanding of what causes harm for ourselves and others. And then if we can see that, we can see what would be more skillful, compassionate, and kind things that help not only ourselves but others as well. So we train for others. I don't think we dump training for ourselves in this way, but it's kind of a step, okay, in widening of our focus. With time and in deepening our training, we begin to train for training's sake. So this is the third thing here. We continue to train for self and others, and we go in and out more naturally. So it's not like, now I'm training for self, now I'm training for others, now I'm training for training's sake. You know, we all know about this. It's more natural, and this of course applies to many things in life. You know, the longer we practice, the more we put into it. There's a naturalness that goes on. The precepts become our blood and bones, and we telescope in on them on a deeper level. Okay, we don't dump the precepts, graduate from the precepts, but we just go deeper with them. So I think this training for training's sake is actually a very subtle and refined training. Okay, and it's definitely not a matter of, oh, I consider everything training without considering what the everything is. We always got to be looking at what we're doing. You know, training for training's sake, we float around during the day and we do this and we do that and we just go from one thing to the other and everything's fine. Well, maybe it isn't some of the time. Maybe we're making a mistake sometime. We've got to look. Even if we've been at the practice for 40 years, we still need to reflect in this way. What's the consequences? What are we doing? Is this a good thing to do? But there's a more natural process there going along. Okay? With time and practice becomes less arduous and more joyful. I mean, it's just a nice benefit. Okay? Someone once said to me that they no longer distinguish between hobbies and their monastic work. And I thought, oh, okay. I didn't grill the person on what they meant, and I can't say, and this happened long ago, so I'm not going to go back to it, but I can't say what that person meant for themselves, and it's not up to me to judge what they said or to judge them. But for myself, when the bell rings for work or meditation, I'm going to go there, you know. The amount of time I spend in homies in my room and listening to the Giants game, it's not a lot of time, okay? And it's so. I think the training is in some ways like the old apprentice system, and I think that. Not to harangue the internet, but you can get new YouTubes about anything now. So maybe you don't have to go through the old apprentice system, you know, and learn from somebody, because you can get all this stuff. Well, I actually kind of wonder about that, if that's... And as we all know, some of the stuff out there is good, and some of the stuff is, I mean, strange, and some of it, you know, can really help you fix your toilet. that you can't, you know... You can't get or understand from a book because somebody's doing it there. But still, I think we have to be careful. Okay. So in the old apprentice system, we started, I'm just going to use a couple analogies here, or a couple examples, by just hauling bricks. Okay, if you work with a mason or a bricklayer, you wouldn't just immediately waltz in there and start laying bricks, you know. You'd probably mix and haul the cement for quite a while. Okay? If you were working in the library system, you know, you don't just go immediately in there and start reorganizing the library. You start by reshelving books. Okay, so there's this learning process. You know, Master Ji used to talk about it at her father's tailor shop. The first thing that people did is they picked up the pins. Actually, quite important because, you know, pins in the feet are not fun. And it also, you know, you respected the tools that you are using in your work. And you learn it from the ground up. Okay. I just think there's a real value in this, even today, okay, with all our information out there. Also think that even if we have been at something for years and we don't do so much manual labor anymore, maybe because the body has gone a certain way or we need to superize more than doing the actual manual work, it's not a question of being above the work. Sometimes I think we feel that we are authorities or experts prematurely. You know, the old apprentice system, it took time. It took time. It's always good to listen and learn from someone who has experience. Even if we want to later not act on the experience, but there's something about it. It's not always necessary that we must do it our way from the start. We can. Maybe we'll come up with a very good way of doing something. Okay. But whether learning or the learned one, humility is needed. Without humility, we're going to miss a part of the picture. It could be a very important part of the picture. And selfishness and waste of time occur. Personally, I wish I'd taken more advantage of my teacher's offerings at the time they were given. But I didn't. At least now I appreciate what she was getting at. I think it's really important to cultivate stillness. So you had your meditation. We had our meditation Sunday now. Cultivating stillness so that we can see the intention of the offering. Because sometimes we get thrown off by the words or the way we think somebody's saying something. But what is the intention? So it's the person who can sit stiller that can see the intention. Okay. So we're never going to be totally selfless. And we're never going to not waste time. At least this is the way I feel about myself. I'm human. It's not an excuse, but I'm human. I make mistakes. We can pay attention to what we are doing and its consequences. And we can shift gears. This is one of the lovely things that I find that meditation helps you with, is that you can, as you become aware, you can shift gears. And I think the shifting gears is a good analogy for training for training's sake, because there's this fluidity there. I think to vow to live selflessly and to not waste time is a very good vow, even though we might not be able to do it perfectly. It's a good aspiration, and it's a good intention. In fact, it will change our lives. And vows are not about perfect. They're about our wanting to do something about ourselves and keep at it. Okay? And when we get a foundation, you know, that we've built because we're working on keeping a vow at something and not being selfish and not wasting time, then we build a foundation. Okay? And you don't have a house without a foundation. When the earthquake comes, it's gone. No. But a house with a foundation, it can take a lot of shaking and still stand. And you know, that's an important thing. Okay, I don't think I talked really long, so I'm going to read this piece to end here. Because I think that Great Master Dogen and Reverend Master Hubert, who translated this, do a far better job than I did of explaining this. Okay, so in the Shobo Genzo, there's a chapter called On Ceaseless Practice. And I think the Japanese word is gyoji. It's actually the longest chapter in the Shobo Genzo because it's two combined chapters. And there's an introductory part and then a lot of examples of ceaseless practice from old teachers and masters. I think it's really worth reading. Okay, so Great Master Dogen and Reverend Master Hubert say, the great way of Buddhas and ancestors is invariably involves unsurpassed ceaseless practice. This practice rolls on in a cyclic manner without interruption. Not a moment's gap has occurred in their giving rise to the intention to realize Buddhahood. In their doing the training and practice, in their experiencing enlightenment, and in their realizing nirvana, for the great way of ceaseless practice rolls on just like this. As a result, the practice is not done by forcing oneself to do it. I think that's an important thing. It's not a forcing. And is not done by being forced to do it by someone else. That's important too. You have to do it for yourself. You have to do it because you want to do it. It is a ceaseless practice that is never tainted by forcing. The merits of this ceaseless practice sustain us and sustain others. The underlying principle of this practice is that the whole universe in all 10 directions receives the merit of our ceaseless practice. Though others may not recognize it, though we may not recognize it ourselves, still it is so. As a result, owing to the ceaseless practice of all the Buddhas and ancestors, our own ceaseless practice has clearly manifested. And owing to our ceaseless practice, the ceaseless practice of all the Buddhas clearly manifests, and the great way of the Buddha pervades everything. And owing to our ceaseless practice, the Buddha's way rolls perpetually onward. Accordingly, Buddha after Buddha and ancestor after ancestor have dwelt within Buddha and have acted from the heart of Buddha and have fully manifested Buddha. And they have done so without a single moment's interruption. Due to this ceaseless practice, there is the sun, the moon, and the stars. Due to ceaseless practice, there is the great earth and the vast expanse of space. Due to ceaseless practice, there is body and mind, along with the internal effects of our past karma and the external conditions of our surroundings. Due to ceaseless practice, there are the four great elements and the five skandhas. Even though ceaseless practice is not something that worldly folks desire, it will be what all beings truly come back to. Now, when he's saying worldly folks, he doesn't mean lay people. He means anybody whose mind is so fixed on selfishness, you know, in terms of grabbing at things. Okay, where was I? Oh, here it is. Okay, even though ceaseless practice is not something that worldly folks desire, it will be what all human beings truly come back to. Due to the ceaseless practice of all Buddhas of past, present, and future, all Buddhas manifest ceaseless practice in the past, present, and future. And there are also times when the merit from the ceaseless practice no longer lies hidden. And as a result, the intention to realize Buddhahood arises along with training and practice. And there are times when that merit does not show itself, and as a result, it is not encountered or perceived. You need to explore through your training that even though it may not show itself, it does not lie hidden, because it is not tainted with appearing and disappearing or with existing and dying away. Though it may be concealed from us at the present moment, the ceaseless practice that has brought us into existence is present in every single thought and thing, all of which arise due to coexisting conditions. And we just do not realize that we are actually doing ceaseless practice. And I think I'll leave it there. So, thank you very much.